Outdoors in El Pacifico. Phil Hendrick.
Fearing in Iran's affairs and express your regret in
any
a way.
Fair investigation has to be broad enough to encompass not just those interrogators,
in
but
the
all.
End, this is going to be a powerful, learning story.
I'm supposed to pray for the socialist devil.
I ain't a monster.
Huh?
All right, world famous Phil Hendrick show every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. The last few days we've been going through a rebuild in our studio here, and so tonight we don't have a video cast available for you on our website. We apologize. It'll be back up for you tomorrow night, but we've just, you know, like I said, done some technical adjustments here that have necessitated a couple of things kind of going south for a second or two. But everything up, firing again, like I said, in a short while. We've got the show for you here, the radio show for you here tonight. And as I mentioned, this is a news, talk, and entertainment show that doesn't try to, you know, try to go down this conservative liberal thing that you hear so much about, you know, that you think you're supposed to be, you know, in order to be an American. We just try to, you know, figure out, well, what's the problem here? What's somebody crying about today? And what do you suppose the answer is? I mean, how can we get to some kind of a solution the best possible way we can, you know, as fast as we can? And if that means that I'm not a member of any party, I'm not going to be going home and crying about that. And what we do try to also make you aware of are some of the facts behind the stories that you're hearing. You may think it's a story, and it may not be a story at all, because there's a huge media war, like we said, that's going on. And they're reporting things, folks, that are not even news stories. They're just reporting these things to see if you'll react to them. And if you do, then they play them up, but it might be something really simple and of no real value or no real consequence. For instance, they tried to get a controversy going about Michelle Obama last week. We reported this, and we told you at the time. We said that a couple of news outlets, and I think one of them was MSNBC, and another one might have been CNN. I don't know, but and it doesn't matter, really, because Fox is just as guilty of this as those other two. They wanted to make a controversy out of Michelle Obama wearing shorts. Shorts to the Grand Canyon. It was MSNBC, The Today Show, and The Huffington Post. And the reason why MSNBC and the LA Times, and the reason why the LA Times, MSNBC, and The Huffington Post picked up on it is because The Today Show tried to invent it. So The Today Show invented a controversy. There was no outrage. There was nobody upset over Michelle Obama wearing shorts to the Grand Canyon. But The Today Show decided to turn it into outrage. They said some people, and they never really said who. So the Huffington Post, which never saw a non-story that they didn't love, they picked up on that. MSNBC, which is desperately trying to claw onto something, anything. Talk about the Grand Canyon. Those guys are about ready to fall into the river. And the LA Times, the same story. And here we are a week later. Have you heard anything about anybody being pissed off about Michelle Obama wearing shorts? I don't think so. So that's what I mean. It's an invented story. And it didn't get any traction because it was so ridiculous. However, this is one that isn't invented. This is one, the story that we're going to start the show with tonight, one that you've heard a lot about, and we've talked an awful lot about it. And there is a political element to this, and it is pretty blatant. And I think I know where the president stands. I'm pretty sure I respect Eric Holder enough to know what it is he's going to do. But meanwhile, it's Robert Gibbs versus Dick Cheney, which is rather kind of an irrelevant argument. I mean, neither one of those guys has any decision-making power in the present government. Robert Gibbs is a press secretary. Dick Cheney's the former vice president of the United States under George Bush. Neither one of these guys has any pull, any say. Nobody's going to pay any attention to them when it comes to making policy. Some people may notice their opinions, but it isn't. These guys don't pull the trigger on anything. So what happened? Well, the White House, as you know, and maybe not even the White House so much as the Attorney General, that is Eric Holder, that's the Justice Department, has said, yeah, we're going to take a look at these lawyers to see whether or not these lawyers under the Bush administration. Now, please understand, folks, what we're talking about. And when I say that, I mean that. I'm not saying, please understand this because I'm a conservative. I'm not saying, please understand this because I'm a liberal. I'm saying, please understand, because you're an intelligent human being, so am I, and we want to know what's happening, and we don't really care what the stock conservative or liberal talking point is today on this glorious August 31st, one day before Phil Hendrick's birthday, 2009. We just care about what's happening. Well, here's what's happening. The political bullfight around the interrogation of detainees reached such a bloodletting, such an uproar from the crowd, such a sombrero toss into the air, that it became almost a fait accompli that when Obama became president of the United States, there was going to be pressure from within his party particularly to look at the Bush administration and find out if they committed war crimes, you know, to find out if any of them were guilty of turning the gas on in the ovens, because that's the level of ridiculousness this thing had reached. You know that. Maybe the vice president is guilty of some kind of misdeed, and we can throw him on the fire, too. And if we're lucky, Bush, why, this could be My Lai times, you know, 1,000. This could be Auschwitz. Man, we could have a front page. And, you know, do they have evidence? That's another story. That's a completely other argument. I don't even know if they're really interested in going down that road, because once you say, well, where's your evidence? Well, you know, a friend of a friend told another friend of a friend. And a lady I know, she wrote a hell of a book. And Vince Bugliosi, I mean, he put Manson away. Vince is a good guy. He's a nice man. As I've often said, he deserves his place in history. But Vince, I think, is cracking up a little bit, man, if he's buying into a half of the stuff that he claims to buy into. In any event, the White House today fired back after over the weekend, Vice President Dick Cheney called the Obama administration's decision to open a probe into alleged CIA abuses an outrageous political act. Now, that's an overstatement by the vice president. The Obama administration's decision, well, that means the Justice Department's decision to take a look at how these attorneys arrived at their decisions in case there was a blatant circumvention of the law, is different from saying that they're opening up a political, a politically motivated investigation. Yes, I know that there's all kinds of people ringing the hotline at the White House off the hook each and every day. Ariana there, Fraulein Huffington, along with Obersturmfuhrer. I'm sure he's got some sort of a backstairs phone someplace, if you pardon the expression. And, of course, Pelosi. And, of course, Dianne Feinstein, who has the Intelligence Committee. And a whole lot of other activist types who want to prove that there were abuses, that there were criminal acts. Criminal acts. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's against the law. Well, all right, it's against the law. But let me ask you a question. You're a lawyer. You're asked to give an opinion on certain interrogation techniques, certain operational tactics and techniques, and the overall operational art of the CIA when it comes to its interrogation of detainees. You're asked to give an opinion as to what is legal and what isn't under U.S. and international law. And you write that opinion. You say, here's what we believe they can do, here's what we don't think they can do, and this will be their directive from the legal arm of the United States government, from the legal team put together to make sure that what they do is legal and within the law, legal within the international and national laws that pertain, right? Right. And we know that they did this. The Obama administration admits, yes, they did write these opinions. They wrote these memos. So it isn't as if they said to the CIA, you just go ahead, we're going to lunch. It isn't as if the CIA said, we're not going to tell them about this. As a matter of fact, you know, if you've been reading the news, Pelosi, and I bring her name up because last spring, she remembers being briefed, but wait a second, that wasn't the right briefing, and it was a staff member, and I don't know, I don't think they did tell me. So in other words, they have this almost down to a nose hair, you know, as to what date and when and how many briefings, and was it only one, and maybe it was only one, but then 6 months later, there was a staff member at another one. So we know that they're writing these memos and that they're giving briefings to the Congress. We know that the Gang of Four, so-called, which are the heads of the intelligence or the members of the Intelligence Committee that are conservative, or rather Republican and Democrat, they were in on this, so no one's hiding it. Nobody's hiding that the Justice Department of the United States had to offer an opinion, had to give some directive to the CIA on how they could interrogate people. This isn't a secret torture campaign as has been repeated over and over and over again, with the hope, the very fond hope, that it becomes fact. Torture campaign. It was a torture campaign. He made it legal, a torture campaign. He said it was cool, a torture campaign. Bush likes torture. Everybody likes torture. Torture. And no one wants to define torture. No one wants to know whether this so-called torture was actually torture under the law that existed at the time, and so on. All right. What they're doing then is the following. They're going in, the Obama administration, they're looking at the reasoning and they're looking at the standards adopted and the reasons for adopting those standards. They're looking at the legal opinion and why the legal opinion was adopted. They're taking a look at these memos, and they're going to decide whether they, in the opinion of the Obama administration, they're going to decide whether, in point of fact, these memos were directing legal activities or not. In other words, they're pitting their opinion, their legal team's opinion, against the legal team of the Bush administration. Now, folks, this is real dicey. This is not saying, aha, here's a law, you broke that law. That's not saying that. Because even the Obama administration cannot say that a law was broken. They cannot say for sure whether a law was broken, or whether, in their opinion, they would have done it differently, and therefore, in the opinion of Eric Holder, if we did it this way, then this is legal, and the Bush administration did it another way, and it is illegal. And they're setting up, if they're serious, and I'm going to tell you something. I may be out on a limb on this one, but I think that Holder can't possibly be serious about really digging into this thing and interpreting the actions of the prior administration to the point where he is very comfortable in saying, I have evidence of a criminal act, I want to prosecute, because he's opening up. You think that the election of 2000 was a Supreme Court nightmare? You think the election of 2000 was the United States government and its ability to transition power from one administration to another a huge test and whether or not the Constitution was going to be able to embrace all of these things? You wait for the legal challenges that are going to come down on top of Eric Holder's head and Barack Obama's head when the Bush administration puts all their attorneys together and sues the living hell out of everything that Holder's doing, pushes it all the way to the Supreme Court. It's going to be a nightmare. Do you think this country needs, at this particular point, an attorney general who has gotten pressure, political pressure, from within the Democratic Party to push an investigation which can only go this far? My interpretation is the Bush administration's lawyers misinterpreted the law. Is he actually going to say, no, they blatantly avoided this law, they blatantly went around the corner? And the way the press is going to report it, you will not be served very well, folks. The way that the media is going to report this, you are going to be abused as consumers of the news. Abused. You think you're going to get news? You're not going to get any news. They're already gearing up for the Pulitzer Prizes at the Washington Times, at the Washington Post, whatever the hell they call that thing these days, and the New York Post, and the New York Times, and the L.A. Herald, the L.A. Bugle, whatever. And they're gearing up for their big Pulitzer run because these guys are going to be what they've always been, opinion makers, not news reporters. So you're going to have to find your facts where you can find your facts. I'm here. I'll give you some facts. I got Vice President Cheney's opinion on this. I've got Cheney and I've got Robert Gibbs talking here. And here is Cheney defending the Justice Department lawyers on Fox, which I suppose is not a surprise, on program Fox News Sunday.
The fact of the matter is the lawyers in the Justice Department who gave us those opinions had every right to give us the opinions they did. Now you get a new administration. They say, well, we didn't like those opinions. We're going to go investigate those lawyers and perhaps have them disbarred. I just think it's an outrageous precedent to set to have this kind of, I think, intensely partisan, politicized look back at the prior administration. I guess the other thing that offends the hell out of me, frankly, is we had a track record now of 8 years of defending the nation against any further mass casualty attacks from al-Qaeda.
Now, here is Robert Gibbs, the press secretary for the White House. He took a swipe at Cheney's foreign policy expertise.
I'm not entirely sure that Dick Cheney's predictions on foreign policy have borne a whole lot of fruit over the last 8 years in a way that have been either positive or best of my recollection, very correct.
If anybody can tell you, folks, now I'm going to tell you what's going on. If anybody can tell you specifically what laws were actually broken by Dick Cheney or any member of the United States government's Justice Department under George Bush, they are a rare human being indeed. You should put them under glass. You should have them embossed in gold. You should have them, you should put them on display at Ripley's, believe it or not, because there isn't a soul, even in the Obama Justice Department or anywhere else, any of the Cheney haters, there's not a one of them that can tell you the law that was broken, any law, by the Bush administration. We'll be back with more on this. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, number 877-876-PHIL, or at twitter.com/RealPhilHenry.
Phil Henry.
You know, last week, and our number 877-876-PHIL, last week we talked to you about the Tom Ridge comments. They were in a book. Were they in a book?
Yeah, he wrote a book about it, as far as I know.
Tom Ridge said he was in a meeting, and it was just before something, I forget, it was before the election of 2004, and it was discussed whether they should raise the threat levels because Obama, Osama bin Laden had said, you know, that the United States was going to be doomed, you know, if it elected George Bush, and he didn't dig Bush, and he basically came out and said, hey, vote for Kerry, you know. And so anyway, in the book, Ridge seems to have said, when I was in that meeting, it looked like it was politically motivated, like they wanted to raise the threat level so that Bush would be elected, so the American people would see, oh, my God, there's a threat from Al-Qaeda. George Bush protects us. Let's vote for him. Never mind the fact that Osama bin Laden had already come out and said that Bush is no good and you're really running a risk here if you reelect this guy. And Ridge said he felt specifically that Ashcroft and I think it was Ashcroft and Cheney, maybe it was, Ashcroft and Rumsfeld wanted the threat level raised for political purposes. He felt that way. It was his feeling. There were others in the meeting that didn't feel that way and were quoted as saying such. And now we have a story today where he's backpedaling a little bit. Well, why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up as an example of how the media is going to use this information so they can get another ad dollar in their pockets. I'll give you an example. Rachel Maddow, who I think is very talented, and I think she's really smart. Do you really believe Rachel Maddow thinks that this Ridge book, Ridge saying it was his sense that they wanted to raise the threat level to get Bush reelected, do you really think Rachel believes that that's proof of a conspiracy in the Bush White House? Because that's what she said on her show. Now, she may say it on her show, the same way that Glenn, for instance, Glenn Beck says that he thinks Obama's a racist. Or that he believes that, I don't know, you know, like the end is nigh. Do you think that Rachel believes that? Well, the answer, I can give you the answer. No, she doesn't. She doesn't believe that. She doesn't believe there's a conspiracy afoot. She doesn't believe that that proves there's a conspiracy. Rachel is, as Glenn is, as quite many, and frankly, 99.9% of all of these guys, she's there to get audience, and to raise the value of her program to advertisers. This is what I'm saying to you guys when I say, please be careful, please be careful. I'm telling you, there's no premium these days on telling the truth. Nobody is really, it has no value at all. What has value is the ability to grab you and hold you there in front of the television set. So, the Ridge story was horse dung. Obama being a racist, absolute poppycock, and even Glenn would tell you that. And now we have the story here about whether the White House of George Bush was breaking the law and was actually approving things it knew were patently illegal. This is not a story that has anything to do with truth. This is a story that has mostly to do with politics. Now, I believe Eric Holder is a pretty honorable guy, But I think that he is sitting there, and he's got about 150 different people with all kinds of guns, squirrel guns and cannons and little tiny pistols, and they're all pointed at his head, and they're all saying, well, you better find something, man. You better find something, because in a lot of ways we got into this job by criminalizing the activities of the Bush administration, by saying, look at how rotten and nasty and terrible they are. You know, we're kind of at the page out of the Jimmy Carter playbook, so you've got to find something. All right, so I'll look at it, okay? And if I don't find anything, I don't want to hear any squealing from you people. I got money that says that's kind of the conversation that's going on right now. All right, coming up next in the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, a pastor wishes Obama is dead. We'll take some calls. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You know, I know you're probably saying, well, you know, if it's not that big of a deal. Well, it's a big deal because it's more time away from getting things done, right? I'm going to tell you something, and I know many of you probably, I say many of you, you want to know why? Because it's not a secret that a lot of people that listen to talk radio are conservative thinking people, conservative philosophically. It's not a secret, this is not a news flash, that the majority of people could probably be identified as men, conservative men, and so I don't think it's a stretch for me to say that a lot of you, I don't know if it's a majority of you, but a lot of you are probably thinking that Obama is spearheading some kind of an effort to indict the Bush administration for criminal activity. And I'm here to tell you, as difficult as this is going to be for you to believe, I have a very firm belief that what he's up against is the following. Number one, if you're the chief executive, you have to allow your attorney general the leeway to investigate possible criminal activity. You can't tell him not to investigate things for political reasons any more than you should tell him to investigate things for political reasons. That's the first of a couple of things I want to say. The second is, as a man of conscience and as a president who abides by the law, he can't say, well, I think this is all political and I just don't believe that this is a good use of our time and I'd like to direct the attorney general away from looking into this because I think it's silly. He doesn't know. Maybe Eric Holder's going to come to him in a month and say, you know what, I've got some evidence of criminal behavior. I have evidence that a crime was committed. But I do believe that Obama is fully aware of the political impetus of this. I think he knows it, and I think that he is, you know, willing to go along with it because so many of the people that are pushing for this helped elect the guy. And this is paying the price. This is the period where he has to pay the piper a little bit for this. I mean, he got into bed with some real stupid people to get elected president of the United States. People talk about William Ayers, or they talk about Jeremiah Wright. And I said during the campaign, if you're a black man running for president of the United States, where do you think you go for money? You think you just walk into the usual offices, and you walk up to the usual people, and you say, well, hi there, I'm going to run for president. They take one good long look at your black face, and they're going to say, you're running for president when? Not this year, you ain't. Don't worry about it. A black guy walks into any office, any political office where the money's getting doled out in the United States of America and says, I want to run for president of the United States. And there's a whole lot of people with their eyebrows going up in the air like, yeah, okay, sure. Good for you. Hey, all right, man. What a brave thing. And do they really think the guy's going to get elected? How about, I'll give you two choices, multiple choice. No and not. No and uh-uh. So he's got to sit there and break bread with whoever, whenever, however, to try to get a little bit of money, a little bit of momentum, and a little bit of stage time and face time, and talk to as many people as he can. And he rubs elbows with and shakes hands with some real idiots. Same way Republicans get elected, as a matter of fact. They got to break bread with some real morons. Some people that couldn't find their ass with both hands if they had a searchlight. But they got to do it because a lot of them have got a lot of bread and they can spread it around and they can help them out. Obama had to make nice with the I Hate Bush anti-Iraq war code pink wing of the Republic of the Democratic Party, even though he himself is far more moderate when it comes to those things, far more pragmatic than anybody ever gave him any credit for being. To this day, people think the guy is some kind of dyed-in-the-wool liberal. Hardly. It just so happens this guy got dumped into the office at the exact same time that the United States of America, our economy, was going through such a profound beating that it was the concerted opinion of a lot of people the government had to do something, and that translates into socialism for a lot of folks, right? So don't worry about that. To my way of thinking, and I'll stake whatever, you know, however much money you want on it, I'll stake my whatever there is of my reputation on it. I mean, everybody's got an opinion, man, just like that other part of the body. And here's mine. Obama's not pushing this. He's going to let it happen because he really doesn't have any choice. And he has these real firebrands like Feinstein and the rest of them running in the Intelligence Committee and others who want this thing to go forward, man. The ACLU, which has not distinguished itself in this particular discussion at all. They have embarrassed themselves with their lack of knowledge when it comes to international law and exactly what law we're talking about being broken by the Bush administration. Just exactly how would you guys go about it? The ACLU couldn't tell you that. They couldn't tell you how they'd go about giving an opinion by another lawyer. Well, here is what the law says, and I believe that this is the correct opinion. This is the correct. Well, no, I disagree. I would do this. And because I disagree, you're under arrest. What? You know, some laws, folks, you can interpret, and this is why it confuses people. It's against the law to steal. What'd you do? He stole a thing. Get him. He's under arrest. He stole. You broke in. It's not yours. You stole. Right? Right, right. Okay, good. But this is going to shine a white-hot spotlight on the very thing we've been talking about. Just exactly what was legal and what wasn't legal internationally, nationally, around the time that Al-Qaeda got its first sponge applied to its kisser, back there in the spring of 2002 or maybe late 2001, whenever they were doing this. What was legal? What is a prisoner of war? And if he is not a prisoner of war, is he an enemy combatant? Is he a civilian militant? Is he a detainee? How do you qualify and quantify this thing standing in front of you? What is it? And what is, therefore, the legal treatment of that person if that person is not covered under the international laws that we've laid down for the treatment of prisoners of war? He's a combatant. He's not a civilian. We know that. He had a gun. He killed people. But he's not wearing a uniform. What is he? Who is he? Where do we keep him? These were all decisions that had to be made on the run. These were all decisions that were difficult decisions. And they also opened some doors for some activities that on another field in other times might not have been allowed if we were fighting an army, for instance, that was wearing uniforms and was, in fact, covered under the Geneva Conventions. So there was a lot of interpretation of the legal norms of the day. And that happens an awful lot when we get into these kind of this rarefied air of international law. So if some clown, and I do mean clown, Ringling Brothers clown of a lawyer in the Obama administration is going to look at his equally clownish counterpart there in the Bush administration and say, well, I would have interpreted it this way, therefore I think you ought to be arrested. Why don't you pound it straight up sideways, man? What do you mean you think? So if a guy turns around and says, I'm going to arrest you because you interpreted that law in a manner that I would not have interpreted it. You have read that law, in my opinion, the wrong way. You have, therefore, broken that law, and you are under arrest. I will indict you. That is the very definition if you talk about these lawsuits that have no merit, you talk about debasing the system. To my way of thinking, that is a debasement of the system that goes far beyond suing McDonald's for $1 million because you got scalding water poured on your crotch one morning. All right, it's 877-876. That's the number. Here's Jim in Anchorage, Alaska. Jim, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. What can we do for you tonight?
Well, Phil, in 1968, when I was in the military, I was in a Green Beret, and I was trained in underwater demolitions. And they said one day, if you get in this pool, you will be drowned. You will be legally drowned, unconscious when we pull you out. So, no choices. Was that torture? No, it was training within the parameters and protocol for them to determine if I was a good candidate. Well, it's the same with this waterboarding. It's within the parameters and protocols of many of Geneva Convention, for one thing. I'm afraid that these people...
Well, now, your example is completely... What are you talking about? That example you gave... Look, my brother was in the submarine service. They stuck him in a tube about 100 feet long and filled it with water so that only his nose was exposed, and he was told to crawl through that. Now, you're telling me that that is the same thing as waterboarding?
No, I'm telling you that in both instances, the military does things within procedure and protocol, a means to an end.
I know, but that's training a soldier. We're talking about something else. This is an interrogation technique used on some kind of individual. We can call him a POW. It would be illegal if it was a POW. But he wasn't a POW, the Al-Qaeda detainee. He was a detainee. Well, he was an enemy combatant.
I was literally drowned, and I don't feel it was not torture.
They weren't trying to torture you, though, were they? Were they trying to teach you how to survive in water?
That's exactly right. And they're the same thing.
Well, they're not trying to teach Al Qaeda guys how to survive with a sponge on their kisser.
It's the military. It's within their protocol, within their procedure, within their rights, within the law, within the Geneva Convention, and everything else. It's
Geneva?
A means to an end to accomplish a purpose.
Right.
And that way,
they were trying to train Al Qaeda to do what? Breathe underwater?
They were trying to gain information that could possibly save me or my grandchildren from harm.
Well, that's true. That's
the one thing government is charged
with. The Geneva Convention.
To protect us
from
foreign threat. And I'm concerned they're going to take away the military's ability to do that.
All right, Jim. You're a good man. Thank you very much. And I got to look up that Geneva Convention. No, I'm kidding around. I hear what he's saying, man. It's not the same. You guys know. I mean, he was trained as a soldier, you know, and soldiers are trained, and they do a lot of stuff. What's it got to do with waterboarding a guy? And if a cat's waterboarded, is that torture? It's technically, legally not torture if he is not protected. See, people don't get this, you know. Now, I know that the protocol on torture is written whereby it says any person, okay. Well, what does that mean, any person? Are you talking about a civilian person? Are you talking about a soldier? Are you talking about, who are you talking about, man? People that are signatories, citizens of signatories to the Geneva Accords? I mean, I'm telling you, this is a legal thicket, and people look back on this, and they say, my goodness, this is black and white. I know exactly what I would have done. No, they don't. I've talked to enough of them now, man. I've talked to that peace group from Canada. I've talked to Code Pink until I'm turning pink. I've talked to our good pal Vincent Bugliosi. I talked to some other nut. I had about 8, 9, 10 nuts on this show. I had the ACLU on the show. I said, where's the law? How do you interpret it? What? Now we had the Canadians. They said this. They said, well, you know, they're prisoners of war, assumed to be prisoners of war, unless they declare otherwise. And, well, we found out they were wrong because they, you know, they have to be declared prisoners of war themselves if they're to be treated that way. So they're going at it from that end. I didn't hear one person, not a one, say to me that the Geneva Conventions are absolutely clear that waterboarding in all instances of all people is illegal. Anyway, why are we having to discuss this? Why? Because there's the fat's in the fire, baby. If you can put somebody up on the, you can stick somebody up on the pyre, man, and have yourself a nice hand-warming bonfire, burn a few of Bush's attorneys, you're going to get your kicks, you're going to prove your point. And at least when the President Obama, who's trying his best, I think, is kicked out of office after one term because nothing got solved other than a bunch of people with an axe to grind, threw a few more bodies up on the pyre, another one for the fire, man, like they said in Night of the Living Dead. Well, they're all going to feel better, and Obama's going to be out of a job. How are you guys going to deal with that one? All you cats that want to have these guys for breakfast. I'm telling you, this is such a, oh, God, you talk about a snipe hunt, man. All right, our number 8, I don't even know what a snipe is.
Yeah, well, it's some kind of animal.
It ain't even real, man. They made it up. 877-876-PHIL. Representative Diane Watson praises Fidel Castro at her town hall meeting. And let's see what else. That pastor that wants Obama dead. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here. You know, it's one crazy religious nut. One, you know, just it's another day, man. And then some other guy standing there in a pulpit raving and sweating. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night here till 1 o'clock from El Pacifico on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And here's an example of what I mean. Now, I know people probably the last 50 minutes, they may say, well, what you've been doing, you've been banging on the Holder Justice Department, Hendry, and you've been talking about how the Holder Justice Department is going to be going after the Bush Justice Department in a political way, and you're saying the reason for that is that this is a matter of interpreting laws that were in place, and the Bush administration decided to interpret them this way, and the Obama administration is interpreting another way, and you're being very trivial, and you're talking about a lot of things that sounds to me like you're some kind of a stinking conservative, you know. I said, well, no, I mean, this is just an example I'm giving you here of a potpourri, a plethora of examples I could give you of the kind of nonsense, the kind of mud throwing and snowball fights and you know, throwing feces from each one's diapers at the other that these clowns engage in, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. Remember the two axioms so far. We've been, you know, how a lot of these shows, they got the 24 commandments of the Irving Farquhar show or something. Here are a couple that we got on the Phil Hendry Show. Number one, Republicans and Democrats would rather the country burn to the ground than have their parties cease to exist. That's essentially that's the truth. Republicans and Democrats would rather America go away than have the Republican or Democratic parties go away. That's number one. Number two, it is more likely that people on television and on the radio will lie to you than a politician. Far more likely. Okay, those are our two. Write those down, will you, bud?
I got the Republicans are going to... Oh, I forget now.
You're a man. Never mind, man. I'll do it, okay? Sharpen your pencil, okay?
Yeah, that's I didn't have a pencil sharpener.
Great. All right, 877-876-PHIL. So, you know, and then we talk about, well, next hour, for instance, if you think that it's sounding a little conservative around here, I got some preacher. This guy ought to be put in a nut house. He says that Obama, he hopes he dies of cancer. We'll have some of that audio for you. And you know, there's other examples from the other side of life. But unfortunately, every now and again, you know, we have one of those shows. Now, here's a lady that we had on the program, Representative Diane Watson. She's a Democrat. And last week in Los Angeles at the Wade AME Church, Representative Diane Watson, who's a Democrat and ardent President Obama supporter, boy, is she ever. As a matter of fact, Diane Watson doesn't have an opinion about anything. She just says that whatever President Obama thinks, that's cool with me. I remember asking her some specific questions. Well, don't you think, for instance, that this is the way to look at it? Don't you think that's the way? Whatever the president says. In other words, I'm saying that Representative Watson, she's probably a fine lady, and people, you know, she's got a real loyal core of friends, I'm almost convinced. She ain't all that swift. She held a town hall event to discuss health care reform and the president's plan. While discussing opponents of the health care plan, Representative Watson said there are Republicans who want to destroy the first president looks like me. Okay, so it's kind of a racist thing. I don't doubt that there's some people out there that don't dig Obama because he's black. In fact, I know it for a fact. That's not a newsflash. That's not a newsflash. How many of them there are, we still have to determine, and how significant they are. They're significant enough that they're destroying the Republican Party. We know that. They're making the Republican Party look like a joke, you know, and of course that's a relative thing. There are a lot of people that think the Republican Party has looked like a joke for a long time. But I'm just saying from the standpoint of being an actual viable party, you know, where there's, I don't know, you know, clear-thinking people who may just disagree with others on how things ought to be done. No, these guys are beginning to look like the freaking Mad Hatter's Tea Party. While discussing opponents of the health care plan, she said there's Republicans who want to destroy the first president that looks like me. The Los Angeles congresswoman also spent time discussing how she believes President Obama will change the way the United States is viewed globally, as well as the leadership skills of Fidel Castro. Here she is talking about... Representative Watson, you should never, ever, ever, ever go down these roads. when you don't even have any idea on how you think about this or anything else that Obama's doing. You just think he's doing the right thing. Don't start venturing opinions about Fidel Castro.
Now, when a senator says that this will be his Waterloo, and we all know what happened at Waterloo, then we have him and he fails. Do we want a failed state called the United States? So remember, they are spreading fear and they're trying to see that the first president who looks like me fails. Now just understand what's at the bottom
line. All right, and now here she is talking about Castro.
It was just mentioned to me by our esteemed speaker. Did anyone say anything about the Cuban health system? And let me tell you, before you say, oh, it's coming, you need to go down there and see what Fidel Castro put in place.
I'll tell you, a few people he put in place, like, you know, hanging them from a dungeon wall. Here she is talking about the Cuban Revolution.
And, you know, the Cuban Revolution that kicked out the wealthy, Che Guevara did that. And
I don't know what she's talking about, man. I mean, are you serious? Diane, it's good that you're playing in front of these friendly crowds. 877-876-PHIL, coming back with the preacher that thinks Obama should die from cancer.
Phil Hendry.